This is the Boundless Pursuit Podcast, a show highlighting the purity of the experience without limitation. Each week, we'll bring anglers as diverse as the fish they chase, whether it be from your backyard or your bucket list. Freshwater, saltwater, conventional gear, or fly, we're bringing stories and perspectives from fishermen from all walks of life, from across the country and globe. In the digital age, authentic communication and networking is critical, and I'd love to hear from you about show suggestions, potential guests, or general feedback. And you can reach me at boundlesspursuitfishing@gmail.com or at my website, www.boundless-pursuit.com. That's where you'll find the entire collection of written articles, podcast episodes, and media. I deeply value the feedback, ratings, reviews, and support of my listeners, and I look forward to hearing from you. I'm your host, David Graham. Now let's get on to today's episode. My guest today is an awesome kayak angler out of Georgia, Eric Atypical Outdoors Goodson. And I'm really pumped about this one because if you remember way back in episode 10, I had Ellis Wynn on the show who briefly gave a rundown of a species of bass called a shoal bass. And that species has really intrigued me ever since. And I followed Eric's Atypical Outdoors YouTube page and Instagram for a good while now. And this dude is all about that river bass fishing scene. Now, I don't personally do a great deal of bass fishing, but this isn't your normal bass fishing. And these aren't your normal bass. Eric is doing rugged launches in the kayak from the side of bridges, down steep ravines, up over and around rocks and heavy current. The guy fishes a population of bass where an element of adventure is a prerequisite. And these shoal bass just don't follow the rules. This is a species of fish that thrives in fast current. They're supreme athletes in a migratory fish that's built to fight. Eric has an incredible fishery in Georgia. Sometimes I don't think it gets the respect that it deserves. Where a coastal plain marked by lowland swamps and marshes transitions into the fall line into the hilly Piedmont territory, gradually transitioning north towards the mountainous Blue Ridge region. At each transitional zone, there's different awesome fish to catch. And Eric is just an awesome guy. And his use of a kayak has allowed him to launch in areas that other anglers just can't reach. And it really puts him in prime area. His Instagram is just one photo and reel and story after the other, showing an amazing fishery and unique scenery. This is Atypical Outdoors, Eric Goodson. I heard of editing videos, but here I am still.
Dude, that is
videos.
Like the one thing people don't understand, the amount of sheer time it takes to edit videos. And like you said, the worst is when you have an epic day on the water and it's all screwed and you can't hear it or you can't see it.
Yeah.
That is the most frustrating thing.
I don't know, man. I told myself like 2024 is my year. I'm making videos this year. And then I got all this camera gear, spent all this money, and I've gone out only twice so far this year, but bring all this camera gear. As soon as I get out there, I just become like enamored by the water and the wildlife and the casting and the fishing. Before I know, I've been fishing for 6 hours and haven't picked the camera up. Like, that is like it's just a whole different kind of discipline. But anyway, man, I know we're rambling, but yeah, the video thing, I'm like, I guess I can just keep editing it a little bit longer. We'll see what it shapes up into. But your stuff, man, I've been following you for a good while. You know what I mean? I do, obviously, a lot of people consider the fishing I do to be like fishing for the weird stuff. Yeah. Like, they don't realize how much I appreciate bass fishing. And I think a lot of people don't appreciate how dynamic bass fishing can be. But the first thing I noticed in your photos is the way that you're doing it. And that a lot of the places that you fish, It's pretty bass heavy content, but in one post you'll have like these big cascading cliffs and caverns on the margins of the river, just beautiful landscapes. And then the very next post you're down in like lowland swamps and black water with cypress trees. And then like the next post is like, I don't know, there's like a little bit more, it almost looks like a trout stream. I'm like, this guy really gets moving around. And I'm like, where is he? So like, I don't know, man, Eric, it's like, introduce me to your home waters. Like, where are you fishing? I can tell that you take a lot of pride in like where you fish, where are you launching, like your home water. So just I don't know. I guess if we're going to start anywhere, start by just introducing me to yourself and to your home waters, especially.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. My name is Eric, Atypical Outdoors. Man, and at heart, I'm really just an explorer. I like to get out there and have fun, man. I'm based in North Georgia, but as you say, the black tannic water and stuff like that, I grew up in South Georgia.
Okay.
So I had the opportunity to go home and fish the Altamaha River, like the swamps. And then me and my buddies, I traveled with a couple of different guys, man. Anything within 2.5 hours away, man, we're going to try to explore it and hit it. So a lot of our trip, man, we're driving 2 hours. We're floating around 10 to 12 hours. And then we're coming home on that same day. Usually we get about one good day a week, every 2 weeks. And we try to make it work best we can, man.
Yeah. Now, that's awesome. Georgia, I think Georgia is one of the most underrated fishing scenes, especially with bass fishing. Because a lot of people, when they think like bass, you know, you think largemouth bass, smallmouth bass. And a lot of people don't even realize there are other bass. But like Georgia is so unique because it's like the state is almost like two different worlds. Like what y'all have, like
exactly.
Y'all've got like the Piedmont and then like the coastal plains. Yeah. And what is it like? What do they call it? The fall line, like splits the state
exactly.
Half or something like that. So it's like you got right. this yin and yang of two fishing worlds, and like there's y'all got like those main rivers that kind of run through it, like the Apalachicola River Basin. What rivers does that encompass? Apalachicola.
So that one flows down. That's the Chattahoochee that flows down.
Okay.
Yep, and then you got the Old Mobley, and then you also have the Flint River. Those are three main rivers for me. I mean, you also have the Savannah River, but shoal bass, which you hear a lot of people talk about, is the Chattahoochee, the Old Mobley, and the Flint. Yep.
Yeah.
So you're right, man.
The shoal bass was actually sort of introduced to me by another guy I'd had on the podcast who's from Georgia, this kid named Ellis Wynn. He kept mentioning shoal bass, kept talking about shoal bass. I'm like, I gotta admit, what the hell is shoal bass? Like, I know smallmouth bass, largemouth bass, spotted bass, and then there's like all those obscure ones like red eye bass and Tawani bass down here, but I didn't know about shoal bass. But that is an interesting one. But I also know that y'all have all of the different ones as well. Yeah, I guess give me like the breakdown, like, because I know you're doing a lot of river fishing, but like, what are some of the players in the river? By that, I mean like what species of bass are you encountering up there?
So for me, one of the species that I encounter the most has to be a spotted bass, man. Spotted bass in my area are everywhere. Like wherever they go, man, they take over. Like we joke around and call them thugs, man, because they breathe and everything. They take over the area, and all the other fish slowly disappear, man. But we catch smallmouth every now and then when we head to the Savannah River. We catch shoal bass in a good bit of our rivers. Every now and then we get kind of largemouths, and then we have the Bartram bass, which is kind of a special fish.
What is that one? What'd you say?
The Bartram bass.
Bartram?
So that one is in the Savannah River. It's a smaller bass. Doesn't get quite as big, but it has some really cool patterns.
Okay.
Yep. Then we have also the Altamaha bass. That one slowly is being taken out by the spotted bass. They breed with it, and you have these crazy, like, subspecies crossover fish hybrids.
Okay.
Yeah, it gets funky, man. Like on the Chattahoochee River, man, they call it like fish soup sometimes because you have a bass that have three different species mixed together, and you don't know what it is. You just know it's a bass.
Now, did some of the, like, I thought I heard somewhere or somebody said, like, there's even Alabama bass. Like, a lot of this, I'm guessing, are they moving into Georgia naturally, or are people, like, you know, introducing them for sporting reasons? Like, how did a spotted bass get there? I don't even think smallmouth bass, you mentioned smallmouth bass, is that, like, their natural range, or were they introduced, or do you know?
I'm not 100% sure as far as the smallmouth. I know we have them in some areas, but the spotted bass, man, they're kind of driven them out. People sometimes are introducing these spotted bass into rivers and also reservoirs because they're fun to catch. They're active. They're aggressive. So they're getting introduced. People put them into a river, not realizing that it's totally devastating the native fish to that particular area. That's one of the big problems that we face, people moving fish around from area to area.
Yeah, and I guess the main one that that is pushing out, or it sounds like, is the shoal bass. So I sort of want to establish some differences, like, because the people that are hearing shoal bass, you know, I don't want them to get the idea that, you know, a bass is a bass. Oh, they're all the same. Okay, if you're river fishing, you're looking for the slack water on the margins of the river, or fishing behind rocks. Like, is it that type of fish? Like, I don't know, man. Like, tell me what differentiates the shoal bass. Like, what is their top end size? Like, what areas of the river are they staying in? And why would the presence of a spotted bass, like, threaten their existence, unless it's, like, simply because they're, I don't know, I didn't realize they could, like, hybridize. So it's like washing out the bloodline.
It's exactly it, man. We actually call them spolies, which is a spot in a shoal bass.
Oh, geez.
So, yeah, man, the shoal bass is a super cool fish, man. Super strong. It's like a smallmouth bass, but with a bigger mouth. So we can catch them on swim baits and stuff like that.
Okay.
So the biggest a shoal bass typically gets is going to be around 8 pounds. So it can grow to be a really good size bass. It's not some small, fragile bass. Like, it is a super strong bass. For us, a trophy shoal bass is like 20 inches. That's the golden standard for a shoal bass.
Okay.
And that typically ranges between 3.5 to like 5 pounds, depending on the time of the year as far as a shoal bass. And what makes them unique is they love moving water. You're not catching them on the slow areas of the river. Most of the time, they're going to be right under a shoal or a rapid. They're going to be sitting in the pools right next to it. Or either they'll sit up in front of a shoal or a rapid and wait for things to be rinsed down to them. They love moving water.
Okay, that's interesting. I mean, an 8-pound river fish is nothing to play with. I mean, that's not a small fish, like you said. Because a lot of times when you think about those like river dwelling fish, it's like, okay, that's usually like your smaller ones, your more sleek, slender, athletic fish. But an 8-pound fish, and it's my understanding, yeah, I mean, they kind of, from what I've heard or what I gathered, I tried to do a little bit of research before this, so I didn't sound like a total, you know, total buffoon talking to you. But this is, you know, this is you're the subject matter expert here. Mm-hmm. But it's my understanding that, like, they're like a rule breaker, if that makes sense. It's like they kind of like they break the rules of what traditional bass should be doing. I think I heard somewhere like the guy was talking about, like, they're literally casting to like the center of the river where the current is the strongest and throwing water lures. And you even mentioned it. I mean, 3.5-pound fish. 2-pound fish, but I've seen your photos. Like, you throw a lot of big lures.
I do.
So temperamentally, I got to imagine that's a pretty aggressive fish. If a fish that, you know, relatively small, eating these huge lures. So, like, what is the temperament of these things like? Is this a finicky fish that's hard to draw the bite from, or are they just like the type that are crushing things that come in their path?
So I would say, man, it's more of an ambush fish, man. They can sit up right against a rock. They can sit in rock crevices. Places you wouldn't think they would be at in like a foot of water. Like, they hold their own, man. And it's so crazy. Like, I can fish in the area, say, for instance, that has a lot of moving water. And on the outside, it'd be a pool. So you may have a largemouth in this slow pool and eddy and a shoal bass on the outside. You can feel the night of the difference between hooking a largie. Because you can hook it, and it'll fight, you know, it'll come along.
Yeah.
Shoal bass will literally go against the current. It will go against the current. And that's why, like, a 13-inch shoal bass, I feel like a 2.5-pound largie. Like, they're super strong.
Gosh. Yeah, I thought I heard somewhere, I was looking, I didn't hear it. I was doing, like, research about them. And I read this study that showed, like, I guess this group had been, you know, they wanted to learn about the migratory patterns, or, like, you know, they wanted to learn about what they're doing when they're spawning, because nobody had, like, observed them on a bed. You know, we think about bedding fish, but nobody's really seeing it. And I saw this study that these guys were, I guess, tagging them. And then, you know, you basically wait on the fishermen to catch your fish and call the number and report it in. And they had found fish that were 20 miles away. They had found fish that were 50 miles away. And then in one case, the fish was 190 miles away from where it was caught. And during the course of that travel, somehow made it over the top of like falls that were like gigantic, insurmountable falls. Like these fish are behaving, I don't know, like salmon, like not like a bass. But so it gets me wondering, like a fish that moves that much, you as the angler probably have a lot of fun with it, one, but two, like they got to be keeping you on your heels. I'm wondering where they're at seasonally. So I don't know, man, like let's say like right now, we mentioned a little bit jokingly before we started recording that you're in some tough conditions, a little bit chilly. It's about a brisk 65 here in Southwest Florida. Might have to put a sweater on later. I don't know. But but like right now, can you even catch them when there's ice on the margins of the river and ice getting up on the guides? I mean, I know rivers are tough in the wintertime. So what is like your winter approach to catching the shoal bass? Has really got my attention. I want to talk about the shoal bass. So like what's the winter pattern for these fish?
So for me right now, it's going to be fishing like deeper pools. So, I mean, I still want some moving water, but I may be fishing the outside of the seam, and I'm looking for water that's going to be a lot deeper. Versus in spring and summer, I can catch them on like areas that's like a foot or 2 foot, you know, with a top water bait. Everything's slowed down now. I'm throwing bigger crawls and fishing a whole lot slower. Or I'm throwing a shaky head. And moving away from some of the bigger baits, but I still throw a glad bait, but a lot of it's everything is slowed down. Yep.
Yeah, I got you. Well, so that's sort of what you would expect. But then like, okay, and then piggybacking off of that as you transition into seasons, you know, I'm wondering if they're making these long runs, they got to be heading to particular areas. Is there like aggregate groups of them during the spawn? Like what is like peak season to catch them? Like where are you finding the most numbers and stuff?
For me, like the summer. Summer is peak. You know, you can catch them on top water. You can catch them pretty much any way you want to. Catch them on swim baits. They're active. Doing some of these spawning areas, sometimes they're going into these smaller tributaries and going near like waterfalls and dams.
Yeah.
They're spawning in the shoals. So they travel a long ways when it's time for them to spawn.
Okay. So that's like part of the allure too of like, that is a species that I would travel out of state to go catch because I don't know, man. It's like the bigger picture of the experience of what I've seen in your photos, what I've read about, I don't know, the ambiance of where you're fishing is very scenic, but that's gotta be part of the reason why I know that you really lean heavily on the use of a kayak. Mm-hmm. But just tell me about, I don't know, the approach of the kayak fishing. Are you doing like lengthy floats? Are you paddling up to particular spots and then going back to the same put in and take out point? I don't know. How is the kayak helping you find these fish?
Yeah, and kind of to touch back on what you said earlier, too, that is some of the best part of shoal bass fishing, man. Like, the lengths you have to go to catch these fish.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you're around the coolest stuff. Shoals, like rapids. I mean, you got to do some work to get to these fish. You just can't always just lunch and just walk up to the best spot. So that's what's fun to me, man. Like, kind of getting after it. Somehow requires work. So we do a lot of crazy things. We have to fish tributaries off of the main river. Mm-hmm. You'd be surprised the size of a fish that gets into a 40-foot across creek. I mean, you can catch a 3 to 4 pounder in a creek or a river that's only 40, feet across. So, I mean, we're doing things like lunching off the side of a bridge and floating down to another bridge. Okay. Sometimes these are kind of areas that most people are not exploring. So that's what's fun to us. Like, you're getting the chance at a fish that may not have ever seen a hook or a lure. So, I mean, they see this big swim bait come by. And it's like, what in the world is this? And it's been days sometimes that we have gotten, 5 or 6 bites on a bait that's 7 inches long. Ooh. Like, sometimes you're good if you get like one bite a trip. But these fish have never seen these baits. The water's fairly clear in some of these spots. So it's a blast, man. We do have some easier things we do, man. But typically, most of our floats are between like 5 and 7 miles. We put one truck at ramp and the other one at the other ramp. And we float down to each other.
That's awesome. I noticed a lot of your photos, too, you're wearing like waders and stuff. I mean, are you getting out of the Are you getting out of the kayak and spending time like in the water, or like, are you staying in the kayak the whole time, or is that really more just like a vessel to get to certain spots, get out on a rock, get out on a shoal, on a riffle or whatever, and just like work one spot? Because I wouldn't like, you know, it's like you could either just be moving the whole time but not really get to thoroughly work it, or are you like pulling off to the side, you know, posting up and then getting out and working certain areas?
It's kind of funny you say that, man. So it's kind of like kayaking to bait fish almost, you know, in some areas, man.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, we'll kayak down to a bend, right? A lot of your fish stay in bends. You got deeper water on the outside of the bend. Typically, a lot of your river fish, they'll set up in the front of a bend or the end of a bend. And if it's a rock with a bend, oh, my God, you better cast at it.
Yeah.
The front of it, the side of it, behind it, if it's the eddies. So a lot of times we'll kayak to a bend, we'll hop out, and we'll get on shore, and we'll cast to the outside ring of the bend. A lot of your fish resonate to that. You got moving water on the outside, and it's typically a lot deeper. Or then we'll paddle up to the front of a shoal, fish in front of it, and then, you know, that's kind of the fun part, like taking a kayak down the rapids.
Yeah. So,
it gets gnarly, man. I mean, we have times where we went out, and people was like, all right, you don't have to walk your kayak down this area. We go for it.
Yeah.
But hey, you take your risk on it, man. Like, you can flip.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm thinking. Like, me, I know I love kayak anglers. I feel like they're so much more efficient than me. I've never, like, graduated to the kayak level. Like, I got my canoe, and I just, like, realized I'm sort of like a sloppy person. I get a canoe because it's like a giant floating bathtub. I just throw all my gear in there. No rhyme or reason. Nothing's packed efficiently. I have like 7 rods just dangling around, rolling around the bottom of the canoe. You know, but it's not efficient. It's just convenient because everything's at my feet. But with that style of fishing, like, you know, obviously you don't want to do that. So I imagine you've gotten pretty good at staying minimal, but still having like the gear that you need. So like when you go do a float for, you know, shoal bass or any type of bass fishing, I guess, what is like what's your pack out look like? Like how many rods? What's your essential gear? Like what's tied down and what's part of your, like part of your system?
Cool. So typically, man, I have 3 to 4 rods. When you're doing some of these river floats, you don't want to have too many rods. I mean, if you got rods sticking up, you're going underneath trees.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can look up and your tree, your rods can be laying and hanging up in the tree or falling off the kayak. You have to be conscious of what you have, like standing up. So typically 3 or 4 rods. I'm a little bit different, man. Sometimes I take 2 swim bait rods, then maybe a rod for like a chatter bait or a spinner bait, and then a rod for a bottom bait.
Okay.
I have it kind of dialed in, like you say. A lot of times it's minimal. Jerk bait, worms, like a crawl, and swim baits. And that's pretty much all you need. You don't have to have a ton of stuff for these river fish. You pack pretty lightly.
Yeah, yeah.
It is a kayak. You only got so much room.
Right. Now, that's cool. I always love to hear what people have. Like, is there any, like, I don't know, like sleeper gear, like the type of stuff that you won't leave home without that maybe other people wouldn't have thought about? Like, ah, man, like, because I know, like, when you get out on the water, you don't want to be like, oh, no, I forgot X, Y, and Z. Is there like certain stuff that you bring for the float that you never leave home without?
Man, most definitely will be a change of clothes, man. You never know what you're going to encounter out there. A dry bag to put some of the stuff in you don't want to lose. Funny enough, man, like, you know, like the attachment, the tether for a cell phone. I have dropped my fair share of cell phones into the river and donated them to the river gods.
Yeah.
So I take a tether. I haven't done too many overnight trips yet. We have a couple that we want to plan. But definitely a change of clothes, the life jacket, of course, man, and the phone tether, man. So I do not lose another cell phone.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't know. I think if I had hit some of those rapids, I'd probably benefit from a change of underwear. So yeah, for more reasons than just one. But
kind of to touch back on things that you said, too, about getting in and out of the kayak and sending us in waders. During the winter and colder months, we wear waders. I know a lot of people have asked not to do that. But on the flip side, some of our floats have trees that lay down across them. So you got to figure, you got to get out the kayak. You're going to have to push the kayak over a tree.
Yeah.
Then hop on the tree and get back in the kayak, or either push the kayak underneath the tree.
Yeah.
That's the thing about river trips. With river trips, you never know what you're going to run into. You can follow a river and it's no tree. Oh, yep. God, you come back a month later after a storm and you might have four trees and you may be too far into the float to turn around. So you may be hopping up on the bank. You're going to have to find out how to get around this tree. So rivers can be kind of sketchy. Just to put that out there.
No, that's cool. Because I'd written that down. Like, I know that you sort of like pride yourself on like exploring like untouched waters. I think that's a big one. And I think a lot of fishermen like lose touch with, I don't know, the meaning behind doing that. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like a lot of anglers kind of find what's comfortable, whether it be like the same type of fish, the same type of fishing, going to the same spots. They're very much like cyclical, like, you know, go to the same half a dozen places because, you know, that's what you know. That's where you're guaranteed to catch. That especially happens. It happens to me. I've got spots where it's guaranteed to catch. So why go somewhere else? But I don't know, man. Like when you decide, like, I want to do something different. Let's go somewhere new. Like let's scout out. Like what is what's like your scout process if you're going to go try to touch untouched waters? Like are you, I don't know, are you one of them guys on Google Maps? Like how are you laying out the game plan? What features does a river or body of water need to have to like draw you out? Like that's where we're going.
That's a good question, man. And the funny thing about it, like you said earlier, man, I have a problem. And thankfully, my good buddy Latrell keeps me in line because we'll have a good spot and a great river. And I'll be like, well, we just hit it a month ago. Let's go check out this. Let's go check out that. That's my problem. That's my sick condition, man. Like, I like to explore. Like, we're like kids. Like, we're excited to see what's behind the next bend.
Yeah.
Like, that's always one of the most exciting things. But as far as the process of figuring out rivers, I am a Google Maps freak, man. I probably have 150, 200 hearts in Georgia alone of like spots I want to explore. Like I stay on there, man. So what I look for typically is first thing, bends. I will look for how many bends a river has. And on Google Maps, a lot of times you can look at shoals. You can see where you have a shoal or a rapid, and then you can kind of look beneath it and see a pool. Sometimes you can see the water quality. And typically I'm looking at bridges, and I'm seeing the distance from one bridge to another bridge. Like, I typically don't want to go further than, like, we did one float, man, 13 miles in a day. But that one had current the whole way. So sometimes you can get away with rivers that have current. But if it's a slow-moving river, I mean, I'm in that 5 to 7 mile range because that's going to take like all day if you fish it. If you're hopping out at bends or if you're fishing in front of a shoal, fishing behind a shoal, and also looking for rocks too. So I spend a ton of time on Google. And I love the tributaries of main rivers. I think a lot of people sleep on those. Big fish get into tributaries. Less competition. It's narrow. It's a funnel for them to actually, you know, a tight fish and ambush them. So, I'm a Google Maps nerd, man.
Have you ever gone out to like one of these super remote spots and then like encounter somebody out there and I don't know, they get upset that you're on their turf or anything like that? Is there any kind of like turf battles out there? Like this is, I mean, my experience, like I'll tell you right now, I prefer rivers and streams and like backwaters over big water, just the way that I am too. Mostly because it, like, I don't know, man. I like feeling enclosed a little bit. I like, you know, I don't know. I like how small the environment is. I like, it's just more interesting to me. But I also know that those are the areas that get more prone to, you know, oh, this is my water. You know what I mean? Like people a little bit less willing to share. So I don't know. I don't know if you run into that issue necessarily because it sounds like you're pretty remote out there.
It's a mix, man. In some of these areas, we'll go to spots and people are like, how the hell did you get here? Like, we'll have people looking at us like, where did you come from? Like, the bridge down the road. You know, it's like, they don't see people on these spots.
Yeah.
Because nobody's out there. It's times we're afloat. We won't see a human for 5 miles or anything. On the flip side of things, we're on social media, so we're in front of the camera a lot. You know, we have a lot of ads that watch our stuff. We get, you know, issues sometimes with gags or other fishermen who, you know, want to keep the waters private. And I'll be straight up with you. A lot of these secret spots I go to, I'm not going to tell where I'm at. I try not to show the bridge. I try to feel it's like munching to go into the water and not name these spots, because a lot of them are small creeks and I want to draw more pressure to them. But you always have that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always a tough one. Like with when people are, I feel like when the background of, like, you know, your photo or your video is just like some rocks and some trees and some mud, the only people that are going to recognize that, like, in, you know, in theory, are ones who are already like intimately familiar with that area in the first place. So it's like, exactly. I don't know, man. It's, I say that, but I know I've had people show up at spots and, I had one famous one years ago when I was in Texas on the Red River. It's nothing but mud and dirt there.
Right.
The background is there's no distinguishable features. Mm-hmm. And but I did have a guy show up on the river one day when I was out there, and I'm talking about, like, you had to rappel into this spot. Like, you had to go through hell to get there. This guy showed up on the bluff and like got out of his car, pulled a box out of the back, and like inflated an inflatable boat and then lowered it down with ropes. I'm like, what in the hell? Somebody's actually here. We never saw any people there. I mean, I did like my homework to even find this location. And anyway, long story short, the guy comes up to us while we were fishing and he's like, "Are you David Graham?" I was like, "Oh my God." And I'm not famous or anything, but I'm like, "You gotta be kidding me." And I'm like, "Yeah." And he goes, "Yes." He's like, I knew it. He said, "I knew it." He told me he saw some of my alligator gar pictures online, used like shadows from like an angles of sunlight on the back of these very specific rocks. I'm like, jeez. How did you do that? I don't know. That's scary what people are capable of, but
yeah, if you want it that bad, I got to give the respect to you.
That's my thing though. Yeah. I feel like idiots. Well, I shouldn't say that. I feel like unreasonable people normally aren't going to go to that length with something like, you know, that's as vague as, you know, a couple blades of grass and some dirt in the background. So, right. It's, you know, like,
I mean, I'll be real with you, man. I feel like an idiot sometimes going to some of the places that we go to. So I know they got to be crazy. They come up where I'm coming.
I know. Well, now, how do you handle that? I mean, that in and of itself is kind of a topic. Like, people kind of coming at you like that, like, I don't know, abrasive, like towards your video, towards your stuff, towards your presence, your very presence on the water. I mean, how do you even give those people the time of day?
Nah, I try to stay out of it, man. You know, like, Georgia is big, but when it comes to fishing, it's very small. So you're going to bump into these people. And, you know, it's just part of the game. Like, you know, sometimes when you start to do well, and my answer is like, you know, we're bringing more notoriety to this fish. You know, it's a potential person that can pay you for your services, you know. Mm. So it's creating awareness for this really cool fish that we have here.
Yeah, I think that the shoal bass, and we keep touching on it, and I want to come back to it because it's like I said, it's, I don't know, it's like, if you're into bass fishing, because it is so, I don't know, seemingly different than the others, it's really interesting to me. Because, I mean, we all, you know, I like bass fishing, but like I want to do it in a different way. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But where are they, I guess? We didn't really establish that. Now, again, I'm not going to ask for your spots. Like, but we'd mentioned earlier the fall line. Like, where are they in conjunction with that? Are they further downstream, closer to like the marsh? Or are they further upstream towards, I don't know, I guess it gets more like mountains, which, but then again, that study showed them moving 190 miles. Maybe they're a little bit of everything. But like, you, where are you finding them geographically in the state? So
they have a pretty good range. You can kind of start around the fall line, but they get up to North Georgia, like in the upper Chattahoochee. They get up to the mountains, but you also have to be kind of careful once you get up to that area because you have like rapids. Like, I wouldn't recommend anybody go anywhere in a regular sitting kayak past in class 2.
Yeah.
After that, it's sketchy. But also, they go lower. Like, you have the lower Flint. Lower Flint's kind of known for, like, some giant shoal bass. And they kind of act differently in different areas, too. You can kind of tell the patterns and the shape of them, and you can kind of tell where they come from, too. So, yeah. It's a cool fish, but it's a pretty good range. You focus mainly on the Chattahoochee, the Okmulgee, and also the Flint.
Right, yeah. Well, I don't want to sell you short, because I know you do more than just fish for shoal bass. Like, what are some of the other... I don't know, some of the other species that are in those areas, maybe bycatch, or maybe things that you just specifically venture off to other areas to fish for. I know I watched one where, like, you and one of your buddies were, like stomping around in the swamp looking for redfin pickerel. That was an interesting one. I've spent my fair share of time in swamps in South Carolina looking for redfin pickerel. That is a difficult fish to find. Like, that's
it really is, man.
Yeah.
Like, that's a, and they that's live a, in no water. Like, they live in the legit swamp in these tiny creeks. Man, we got about 30 to 40 mosquito bites alone that day just chasing after that fish. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But super epic, cool fish, man. And you speak about that. One of the coolest fish that I like to catch every now and then that everybody hates, I think we have a common ground on this one, is going to be the bowfin.
Oh,
people
yeah.
hate the bowfin so much, man. But it is a monster, and it is a fun fish to catch.
Yeah, you're speaking my language. I've seen your photos of your bowfin. I mean, Georgia, I don't know. Like, our region, we're very blessed because, like, it grows monsters. But, I remember seeing a couple of your photos of really big ones. But, you know, that's an interesting one. I feel like the bowfin is, like, kind of next in line for its, like, renaissance. You know what I mean? Like, it's right there where I feel like it's just about to, and maybe it's already kind of made that turn. But like now more than ever before, I get random inquiries from people about bowfin. I'm like, I never thought I'd see the day. I remember a time when it was like such vitriol and hate behind the fish, but it's changing. It's an awesome fishery, man. But I want to know more about like the YouTube channel. Like, I watch your stuff and like, you know, it's YouTube channel is like a dime a dozen, but it's like some people I don't know, man. Like, the enthusiasm that you show on it is infectious. Like, it's real. You know what I mean? But like, what is the YouTube channel? I guess the handle. I guess that's an important thing to establish. But like, what kind of videos, content? Is it educational, entertaining? A little bit of everything. Give me the rundown on the YouTube channel.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's Atypical Outdoors, but I try to keep it a mix. When I first originally started the channel, it was all bank fishing. And my goal was to catch the biggest fish that I could ever catch from the bank. Didn't have like a kayak, didn't have a bass raider. I just started off beating the bank, man.
Yeah.
And then it went to the catch the biggest fish with the biggest bait because I fell in love with the chatterbait. The chatterbait, I call it like my gateway drug. So once I got the chatterbait and I started catching bigger fish, it was like, I don't want to catch smaller fish anymore. It went to the swim baits. So for a while, I threw swim baits, and then I started to fall in love with river fishing. So now you're at the point where I have a mix where it's river fishing and the kayak mixed in with the swim baits. So I enjoy throwing bigger baits and trying to catch the biggest fish that I can catch.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way the channel has went now. So I love the river, but it started out from the banks, and now we're at the river.
Yeah, swim bait culture is interesting. That's an easy rabbit hole to get stuck down, but then it's like you start to see the price tag on some of these things. I'm like, oh my gosh. I think it's like the custom builders, you know. I understand that. I saw one post that you had that kind of made me laugh. It was like, I don't know, maybe one of your buddies had taken you to this body of water that was like known for its crappie. Oh, this lake's got all kinds of, there's great crappie fishing here, tons of crappie. You showed up with a crappie swim bait.
Yeah.
Cool. Bash the hatch.
Go mass
ahead. Yeah. Oh, I love that. Well, you know, the fun thing about like kayak fishing and even canoe fishing is kind of, you know, they're like cousins, you know what I mean? They're like the same idea. It's like the adventure element. And then it lets you like get into like the most unique places. So like, what are some kinds of trips that you'll sometimes do from time to time that like, I don't know, take you out of your comfort zone? Like, you know, maybe you're chasing a different kind of fish, going to a different terrain. Have you gone down to the marshes of Georgia? Have you done any saltwater fishing from the kayaks down there? coastal fishing?
I did one time. We went down to Florida near Panama City in the kayaks, man. And we got educated real quickly, man. We went across a flat, man, and we had to fight for our lives to get back, man. Because we didn't have a pedal drive, just straight up paddling. And we paddled out about a mile and a half, and it was horrible getting back. But I do want to catch like a redfish out of the kayak, man. I feel like that would be a blast. I haven't accomplished that yet. Some of the other trips, man, we'll do, like, we like exploring. So we'll go out, you know, for 2 or 3 days and kind of pick a group of rivers. Like this year, we want to actually fish for muskie. So we're going to probably go up to Tennessee and fish for muskie out of the kayak. I got a love for like toothy fish, man.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That's
not
one
the
of
same way. You know, the muskie's on my list too. That's like, I don't know, man. It's like American anglers. I feel like there's certain fish that like need to be caught. You know what I mean? I mean, there's so many across the country, but like the muskie's just, it's one of those ones that I've gone after a couple of times. I just didn't know what I was doing. You know what I mean? Like
yeah,
I had a, there was a lake in Missouri of all places that I was fishing and like, we'd see them. I say we, I was alone, but like I'd sit, I saw them every time. You know, I fished this one lake 7 times. Every time they'd come to the boat, they'd follow it. And then I just didn't know what to do. I'm like one of those people that like, I get scared when I see a big fish. To this day, I like, I give up one, I go into panic mode. My knees start shaking. I lose all senses. And like, I see the muskie and just freeze up. And all I want to do is look at it. And then I forget I need to move my lure.
So, yeah, I got a fish for it still.
yeah. I still got to try to get him to bite. But I don't know. I feel like that's one that I want to try to squeeze in before the end of the year. But it all comes down to how much time off you got. But yeah, man.
That's true.
That's cool. And that's then out of a kayak. Yeah.
That'd be interesting, man. You know, it'd tug me around for sure.
Yeah. Well, I know that like you seem really like married to the idea of the kayak fishing. Have you entertained the idea of moving to a boat? Like what advantages has the kayak really given you that, I don't know, that like a John boat wouldn't, or a skiff wouldn't, or a glittery bass boat wouldn't?
Mm-hmm. So for the kayak, it's kind of getting in these like remote spots, man, where I may have to like pull the kayak, I don't know, like a third of a mile, you know, down a dirt road to a bridge and hop in on the side of the road. The next step for me, though, truthfully, will probably be a jet boat. I really want a jet boat.
Ooh.
Yeah, to fish some of these bigger waters and go out the muskie, go out the striper, go out the shoal bass. Because some of these spots that I go to, man, like I can't access them the way I want to because they may, you know, it may be a bridge and a route, and the next one's 20 miles away.
Yeah.
So I need the jet boat for some of these more shallow areas.
Yeah, I've played in, around the jet boats a few times in the Ozarks in Arkansas. We a lot of jet boats up there. That wigs me out, man. I don't know, like when you're flying, you can see the boulder like flying by underneath the boat. I was like grabbing all to the side of my, like, oh my gosh, we're going down for sure.
Oh, it's insane.
Yeah, those are a fun one. I had a John boat for a little while that had a jet outboard, but those inboard jets are fascinating. Yeah, that's funny, but yeah, man.
My buddy has one, man, and it is wild, like literally going 40 miles per hour over 4 inches or 6 inches of water. It's crazy.
Oh, geez. Well, I know you're sitting around waiting on it to start getting warmer there. What's your season like looking like this year? Have you game planned out? You know, what's on the agenda? Are you just sort of free flowing at this point?
Yeah, so we actually have a trip coming up towards the end of the month. We're going to try to hit the Withlacoochee and the Suwannee River down in South Georgia, try to catch some Suwannee bass. That's probably my second favorite bass to catch. It's also like a smallie, like it has a crazy build. It's really tall, and they love those cypress trees. One of the coolest fish to catch, man. I think people sleep on the Suwannee bass. So we're gonna head down there. I'm trying to get my buddy on a bowfin. Like he's never caught one, so he's decided to catch one of those. Hopefully a muskie trip around like March or so. And then I got a trip where I'm gonna go to the Susquehanna in around I think it's August. So we're gonna do the northern snakehead and then go for big smallies in the Susquehanna.
Yeah, I was about to say, I know about the smallmouth fishery that river has. Man, the snakehead, that's a, we can talk about that one a little bit. You're going to love that one. Yeah, it's funny. You mentioned all these rivers. Like, a lot of these rivers come down into Florida. So, like, you mentioned Suwannee and the Withlacoochee, which, like, yep. Like I said, I don't have a bleep out button. But it's like, you always kind of like, it's one of those rivers that you got to check to see if anybody's listening. I got to check to see if anybody's listening before I talk about the Withlacoochee. Oh, Jesus. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Somebody's listening. It's embarrassing. But I fish both of those rivers in Florida. Mm-hmm. Man, the Withlacoochee's got big bowfin. I mean, big. One of my favorite spots is the lower part of that river. I think it goes all the way down to like near Tampa. I don't know where it goes. There's a section near Tampa. I'm talking about monster fish, but that's awesome. Who are you meeting up with for the snakeheads? I wonder if it's somebody I know.
So I think I'm a boomerang. We've been talking about it for years, like 3 or 4 years. Yeah.
You got to holler at that guy for me. I've been trying to get him on the podcast. He's another elusive one. I have followed his stuff for so long. It's such a small world, such a small community.
Right?
Geez, man. Kayak fishing. I've caught northern snakeheads from my canoe, but that is a fish that will drive you crazy. Yeah, that's one, like, you catch one of those, and it's like a life trajectory changing species. Like, I feel like those exist. Like, there's certain fish that you encounter that, like, change your perspective on fishing. Like, they have the power to, like, alter the course that you're going on. Like, I have had it wrong this whole time. Like, and like, the snakeheads are one of those, man. It's like, that's a weird one, because, like, you know, I think that we're beyond the age where it's like a guilty pleasure. And I'm like, like, now there's these massive cultures of people that are fishing for them. It's becoming extremely popular. I mean, we got the bullseyes down here in Florida, which are a blast too. But yeah, man, those snakeheads, that's a whole other ball game right there. I think I prefer the northern snakeheads over the bullseyes, just because of, like we were mentioning earlier, they take you into like the most scenic places. You know what I mean? Like, you're casting in all this salad, all these weeds. It's much more. You know, you've got the opportunity to fish them in much more remote areas, but our bullseyes live behind a McDonald's, and, you know, you might have to fight a crackhead to get into the good bullseyes. Totally different. But, oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah, that's cool. What are y'all going to be doing, throwing frogs at them?
Yeah, I think frogs. Yeah. So I'm super excited for that, man. I've been trying to make that happen for the last 2 or 3 years, so I think this year is finally going to be the year.
Yeah, well, boomerang fish. If that guy's listening, trying to get him on the podcast. I can talk to anybody. I can talk to so many different guys about kayak fishing for snakeheads, but, you know, I was like, I want to talk to certain specific people. But
I'll put in the good word for you, man.
Yeah, he seems like a good dude. I know he's a busy guy, but anyway, maybe he thinks I'm going to talk about where his secret spots are. Well, that's going to be cool. And then beyond that, I don't know, you just may have, you're probably like me, like, I don't ever really plan more than a couple months out in advance. Now, more than ever before, I do, only because it's like, you know, the work schedule's got me pinned up. I'm like, oh, geez, I might get to go fishing 30 times this year.
Right.
Scary thoughts. It's like, you got to make it count. You know what I mean? But yeah, that'll be cool. Now, what about ones that you haven't laid out the game plan? It's always fun to, like, pick people's minds, see where their mind is at for where they want to be, where they want to go. Like, you got any trips within the country that, I don't know, I guess I use the term bucket list trips, but like places that you want to go, things you want to do, maybe within the next 5 years?
Next 5 years is definitely Mexico, to go fish some of those trophy fisheries down there. Mm-hmm. And I really want to go to the Amazon and catch peacocks. I want to catch the wolffish. And they got some really cool fish, the red-tailed catfish. That's high on my list within the next 5 years.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think people will be surprised how surprisingly, like, people get scared of the expense of going to the Amazon. But, like, I mean, like, Guyana, where I went, it's really not too expensive. I try to tell, like, a lot of my buddies now, I'm not Mr. Money guy. Like, I think my wife might even be listening. Like, I'm like the most frivolous spender you've ever met. But I kind of had that moment of reckoning where I'm like, I have got to go do this stuff. And it's like, it is amazing how much crap that I have in the garage that I could sell. Like, right now, I probably have at least the cost of travel sitting in my garage collecting dust. It's like there's things you can sell. There's like bad habits you can cut out. And you realize like by the end of the year, you can have $2,000 like that.
But, right.
Yeah, man. That's one. Yeah, dude, that's just speaking firsthand. That's one that will another life changer right there. When you think like you've been to some pure places here in the U.S. and we've got them. But you get to a place like that, and it's like it's almost like you get a weird opportunity to step back in time on what fishing is supposed to be like or used to be right. like here in our country, like unspoiled fish that don't know what a lure is, that will just eat anything that moves. Like I'm talking about the bites coming so easy, you like almost feel guilty, but then you just cast again. It's like, any idiot can catch fish here. You know, I see these guys online, these big wigs online that go to the Amazon fishing, and it's like, this ain't about skill. Like, you know, they kind of, yeah. They want to like project that like, oh, we got it done. It's like, all you had to do was get the plane ticket, buddy. It's like anybody talking about, I'm being open and honest here. It's like, there was no skill involved. It's like every other cast is a fish, but, yeah, man, I would love to do the ones with those big giant peacock bass, the ones with the three bars, the Tamensis peacock. That's different. Like in Guyana was very much you would love Guyana. Like if I could make a recommendation, mostly the variety there is like unmatched. Like you, I mean, you can cast six times and catch six different species, but it's very heavy, like drifting style of fishing. Like you're doing a lot of like in the current riffles, rapids. You know, casting behind rocks, casting behind boulders. Like you feel like you're smallmouth fishing, but they're like 8-pound peacock bass. It's crazy. Oh, and then like the next cast, you'll catch some weird funky thing that you never heard of before. And it's like, oh gosh, you get spoiled quick. But yeah, man, that's one. You wanted any, I don't know, inside information on who to go with and stuff. I'll hook you up on that. But
appreciate it. Most definitely. Another one too, man. I want to catch a big dart, like out in Texas. Ooh, I feel like that'd be tons of fun.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That's the great thing about right now with like social media, and like you're good at it. You know what I mean? Like you're fun to talk to. Like you know, you're like a dude that I can tell values the experience. But it's also like a great way to connect with people and like find folks you can just go link up with. And I think now more than ever before, it's. Like you wouldn't have to like pack up your kayak, drive halfway across the country and like gamble on your luck to catch alligator gar. There's people out there doing it that you may already even be connected with. But now I've like wore out the phrase, but gee, again, there's another species of fish that's like another one of those fork in the road trajectory changing species. I literally just mentioned this to another guy on another podcast, like an alligator gars. That's like a paradigm shifter, you know what I mean? Like you catch one of those, you're like, whoa. You might go from be like a lure fanatic or like a casting fanatic or like I want to catch, you know, I don't know. You'll turn into a big game fisherman very quickly after seeing and experiencing an alligator gar. It'll be like all you can think about.
But when I get spoiled, I'm pretty sure I will.
Oh, geez. Yeah, that's another one. Well, you know, I want to do another alligator gar trip. I've caught a lot of alligator gar, but I've only caught them like the old school way of like chopping the head off of a carp and throwing a big chunk of meat out and just waiting. But now you're seeing more guys going out, catching them on lures, catching them on flies, like proactively, you know, casting it, targeted species. I'm like, damn, that's the way to do it. It's like now I'm at that point where I want to like switch up the experience and just do it in a different way. But yeah. And that's an easy one, man. That's one you can do and just like barely spend any money. You know what I mean? If you're smart with it. But yeah, that's another one like the muskie too. It's like every American angler needs to experience a muskie, an alligator gar, like, I don't know, a white sturgeon, you know, like a king salmon. There's like certain fish we all got to do. Maybe before going to the Amazon, but you know, cut the line, you know what I mean? You don't got to play by the rules.
Yep.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. Well, now, what about the future of, like, the YouTube channel? Are you going to keep going with that? Keep pursuing the growth on that? You're going to be... Presumably, you're going to continue to film all these upcoming trips, make episodes out of that, because, I mean, you're mentioning stuff I look forward to seeing, you know what I mean?
Thank you, man. I really appreciate that. I kind of slowed down on a little bit, but I'm about to start back on it. You know, like it's busy, man.
Yeah. I don't know, dude. I get to where, like, I just do the Instagram thing, and I'm like determined on my upcoming trips to bring cameras and try to make videos. Like, I'm open with it. I'm gonna just throw something out there. Maybe people watch it, have no expectation of any sort of return. That's the way to do it. Stay happy with it. You know what I mean? It's very easy to lose focus of what's most important in this stuff when you start dabbling into the social media stuff. It's like, at the very end of this, all I want to do is be out there. You know what I mean? You work all day. You know, I don't know what like the middle of your week's looking like, but me, I'm staring at a bunch of boxes in the factory. I got Little Miss Betty Lou on line two arguing and fighting with Susie Q on line three. I gotta go break that up. I was like, I just got to escape. You know what I mean? It's like medicinal. You know what I mean? It's like, there's so much more depth behind the experience, but at the same time, it's like, I see so much stuff out there and you experience so many things that you want to be able to relive, and you want to be able to like show your loved ones and your friends, and you want to be able to look back on other than in your dreams. So it's like, that's for me, that's like what I want to start making YouTube videos for. It's like the opportunity to like watch it again, relive it again, see that Arapaima jumping again, other than in my dreams. You know what I mean? But, yeah, dude. Well, listen, like, where can people find your stuff at? I mean, we're talking about it. I think you already mentioned it.
Atypical Outdoors. That's the same thing on Instagram and also YouTube also. Yep.
Atypical Outdoors. Well, I'm going to put it up there, man. But yeah, dude, I look forward to seeing some of your upcoming adventures. The Snakehead one, I'm going to be following along closely.
That'll be a fun one.
You're going to have a blast with that. But Eric, dude, I really appreciate your time. And yeah, man, let's stay in touch. Seriously, if you want any tips on places to go in Texas, areas to check out, guys, maybe that I could link you up with even. I got some connections out there. That is a low-hanging fruit. It is American tragedy that more men and women aren't going out and chasing our alligator gar. To me, that is like our grand champion. It's like, do not deprive yourself the opportunity as an angler to exist that thing in your life. Experience that thing in your lifetime. But yeah, seriously. But anyway, man, I appreciate your time, Eric. And let's stay in touch.
Absolutely, man. We definitely have to.
All right, dude. Have a good one.
All right. Take care, man.
Thank you for listening to Boundless Pursuit. Tune in each week as we bring stories and insight from uniquely talented anglers and outdoorsmen. And if you enjoyed this show, I want to hear from you. Be sure to leave a 5-star review, as this is going to drive the growth and exposure of this show. And if you have feedback or guest suggestions, I would love to hear from you. And you can reach me at boundlesspursuitfishing@gmail.com. For all other collections of media and contact information, please visit www.boundless-pursuit.com.